all of you out there in Radioland. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website at kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. It's safe to say that we live in one of the most beautiful places in the country. We have majestic mountains capped with snow most of the year. We have constantly changing sea, and we even have magnificent bald eagles soaring overhead most of the year. Many people come for a brief visit and fall in love with the place. Of course, most of us don't think about it much, but others have also loved this land of ours. We are often reminded of the Native Americans who occupied these lands. The very names of the towns, the rivers, and the valleys remind us of that Native heritage. As we all know, some of that story is pretty sordid, and the white settlers in general played a nasty role in that struggle. However, this show is not going to delve into the history of the occupation of these lands. Instead, we're going to go back a bit further, before even the native tribes settled here. There were the wild animals that roamed free, bear, cougar, raccoons, deer, and yes, even the soaring eagles. As man spread throughout the land, building roads, bridges, ultimately houses and churches, some of the animals moved off on their own. Others were hunted and often eaten by early settlers. Some were hunted to the verge of extinction, but others flourished around the edges of our civilization. To be honest, it's not all that rare for a resident of Jefferson County to see an eagle, raccoon, or coyote on the suburban streets. Bobcats are rare and bears are pretty unheard of here in the lowlands, but the lush gardens of Jefferson County are a scrumptious feast for the many, many deer around here, much to the frustration of gardeners around town. Still, the tourists drive slowly around and avidly snap pictures of the deer. In the springtime, the Bambis, the fawns, are impossibly cute, bouncing around like they're on pogo sticks. But sometimes something goes terribly wrong. In some cases, man and wildlife just do not mix. What about when a family of snarling raccoons take up residence under your house? We had that happen to us a couple of years ago, so I have first-hand experience. They were just under our deck, just outside the sliding glass door to the backyard. Their razor-sharp claws and teeth are extremely terrifying when they're growling at you through a thin piece of glass. That's minor compared to some of the even more frightening incidents. Cougars and coyotes have both been known to attack dogs, cats, and admittedly rarely, but it does happen, small children. River otters look really cute when they're gliding through the water and perhaps dining on a fish or two. But what about when they decide to climb onto a boat and take it over? Otter poop is perhaps the stinkiest poop on the planet, not to be indelicate or anything, and getting them off is almost impossible. Of course, once they're gone, you must spend thousands to clean and disinfect the entire boat. Remember the movie Ghostbusters? The tagline is, "Who do you call?" The answer, Ghostbusters. Turned out, there's a similar answer here. If you're facing a seemingly impossible problem with wild animals, there's indeed a solution. In this case, who do you call, for example? A pack of coyotes is attacking and killing small pets in your neighborhood, or a cougar threatening the daycare center. Who do you call? Well, you call Mitch the Trapper. I guess that requires a little bit of explanation. I'd like to introduce and welcome to the show Mitchell Draper, also known as Mitch the Trapper. Welcome to the show, Mitch.
Good late morning, Marianne.
Okay, listen, I always like to start the show by getting a little background, you know, start at the beginning. So are you a local guy born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
No, actually. I was born in Reno, Nevada. However, when I was 2 years old, my family moved up here.
Okay, well, that pretty well counts as being a local in my book. So Did you go to the schools here then, including high school? I'm always curious about high school.
I started out at Quilcene and then ended up going to high school in Port Townsend.
Okay. And were you one of those rare kids who loved school?
No.
Okay. That's sort of a short answer.
No, I was not.
But there are some things you really clearly did love because, for example, you told me that you became an Eagle Scout.
Yes, absolutely. I worked my ranks up through the Troop 1816-1 out of Brennan to become an Eagle Scout.
Wow, that takes a lot of effort and mastery of a lot of skills.
Yes, ma'am, it does.
My father was an Eagle Scout, so he used to talk about it, and it really sounds pretty amazing. But were there a couple of things, classes that you did like in school?
Yeah, I did pretty well in carpentry. We were allowed to help build 8 houses for KCCHA here in Port Townsend. Mr. Guthrie taught that class. I did very well in that class. Mr. Giles taught algebra and algebra 2. I did very well in those classes because he was a great teacher.
Okay, well, clearly things had to capture your interest. And I guess scouting exposed you a lot to the outdoors. How did you get into hunting in the first place?
Well, I grew up very poor. The reason we came up here is we were given a piece of property by my grandmother, and we had to eat, and that's how we got into hunting.
Okay.
And so I hunted all my life.
Okay. Now, you told me a story about a scout camp capturing a raccoon. Tell us that quickly.
Yes. My friend, childhood friend, Jasper Hendricks, and I were at Camp Parsons, and we had a nuisance raccoon, per se, just roaming around our site. And I recently studied a primitive snare that I wanted to try out. And we used a blue raspberry blow pop for bait. And we set the trap and we waited. And it was dark. We were laying in our bunks. And we heard the snarling raccoons after it got caught.
I want to finish the story about catching that raccoon, but after that I'd like to go back because I suddenly realized you gave some initials of a organization here in Port Townsend, and not everyone knows what they are. But tell us about capturing that raccoon.
Yes, so Jasper and I were waiting, and we heard it get caught. It was terrifying, and now it was dark. We put all of our thought into building the trap and how we were going to catch the raccoon. However, we did not think about how we were going to release it.
What do you do once you got it, huh?
Yeah, so we kind of did a rock, paper, scissors as you go out there. No, you go out there. No, I don't want to go out there. This was your plan. And eventually it just chewed through the cordage and was freed. And then it got into a fight with another raccoon over the bait.
Okay, well, I think you probably learned something from that experience.
Be ready.
Okay, yes. So let's jump back a little bit and the houses you helped build for that organization, which is?
Yes, KCCHA, Kitsap County Consolidating Housing Authority.
Okay,
they
good.
Had a program here in Port Townsend for 8 houses.
Okay, so helped hone your carpentry skills and other things like that. Okay, so when you were finished with your school experience, what was the next chapter? What did you do career-wise?
I enlisted into the Army Reserves. Mm-hmm. I also worked for the Washington State Parks at Dosie Wallops, Fort Warden, and Old Fort Townsend as a park aide.
Okay, when you're in the Reserves, do you have a version of boot camp or training?
Yes, absolutely. Everybody goes through the same basic combat training, whether they're in the reserves, the National Guard, or active duty.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And how did you handle that? Was it pretty easy for you, or was it tough?
I really enjoyed it, to be honest. Huh. I did very well. I graduated at the top of my class. I was an honor graduate for my marksmanship.
Excellent. That's really good. And so the reserves, you're called up when needed, but there's also a sort of regular rotation, right?
Correct.
So what is it?
So it's 1 weekend a month. It could be 2 days or 3 days, and then a minimum of 2 weeks out of the year, which could go up to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So at times, you know, every summer it seemed we were going out to a training facility for at least 2 weeks to a month.
So you had time to have other career moves there. So what did you do?
After I finished up working for the state parks, I moved over to Kitsap County area. I worked for granite countertops. I would fabricate and install granite countertops. I was a Kirby salesman where I went from door to door and sold Kirby vacuum cleaners. I did very well with that. I won a free cruise to Mexico. I was the top salesman.
Cool. Okay. And did you stay with that or did you move into something else?
After that cruise, I decided I wanted to do something more. And I got hired into the shipyard as a contractor for Delfinus Engineering. And eventually got hired on full-time by the Department of Defense as a crane mechanic.
Okay. And where'd you get your mechanic training? Was that part of the Army experience?
Correct. When I wanted to join the Army, I wanted to be infantry. However, my mom advised that I choose a trade that I could use if I got out.
That's practical.
And mom's normally right. So I listened, and I went in as a wheeled vehicle mechanic.
Uh-huh.
And later on became a wheeled vehicle recovery specialist and served just shy of 10 years. And when I started building a family, I ended my enlistment.
Okay. And you stayed on being a crane mechanic?
Correct. I used to work for the DOD. However, I wasn't making my advancements. So I ended my career with the DOD and hired on with the subcontractor at Banger for the region. I do the same task. I'm still a crane mechanic. I just get paid twice as much now.
That's handy. It makes all sorts of sense to me. Okay, did you continue trapping during this period of time?
I've been trapping for 5 years now. I met a gentleman while I was working for the Department of Defense as a crane mechanic who used to trap out of New Hampshire and Alaska. His name is Justin Crossman.
Okay.
And I am incredibly thankful for him on not only telling me about trapping here in Washington State, but he mentored me starting out.
Great. It's really good to find someone that can help you, young guy, get started. I mean, that's excellent. And I was quite surprised. I didn't realize the degree of licensing and certification you need. Can you just tell our listeners about that?
Yes. So to be a recreational trapper, you have to attend a trapper's education course. Upon completion and passing the exam, you are granted a trapper's education card. This allows you to purchase a trapping permit for the season, which is fall, winter months. If you want to go further, you can become a wildlife control operator, which is what I am today.
Okay, explain what that is.
A wildlife control operator has permission to trap year-round and charge a fee for trapping nuisance wildlife. Not for recreational trapping, just for a business.
Okay, can you explain the difference a little bit between recreational and nuisance?
Recreational trapping, you are probably going to be in the woods trapping beaver, bobcat, otter, raccoon. Some people may allow you to trap on their land in the city limits, which is perfectly legal. But it's within a season from, I believe, November to March. And that's the end of your season. Whereas a wildlife control operator does it for a living monetarily. I built my skills, which the requirement to become a wildlife control operator, you must trap for a minimum of 2 years and show the department that you are an ethical and efficient trapper, that you have the experience to do it safely and efficiently, because as everybody probably knows, the well-being of the animal is a priority.
Right.
We don't want animals suffering. We don't do this because we get joy out of it. It's a kind of a lifestyle.
Okay. Well, when we were talking the other day, you ran through a few scenarios that would require your skills. So can you remember a couple of them?
One of my first jobs was here in Port Townsend, where a couple of river otters got up underneath a man's house and tore it up, tore all of the insulation out of the bottom of his house, defecated and urinated under his house, and this was his rental house. Port Ludlow condominiums had a similar situation. They lost tenants because river otters got underneath one of their condos, and they lost the tenants. So these animals I mean, I tell people the animal's not the problem. The problem is what we provide them with. And my goal is to remove whatever that provision is. That's the goal. So trapping is actually just a small portion of what I do for my business.
You do a lot of education of people as well.
I would like people to be educated on this topic. Two points, one of which, never feed wildlife. We want to believe, it's an entertaining thought to believe that we can live in harmony with these animals and domesticate them because they're cute and we want to make friends with them. However, if you feed a raccoon, I promise you, you're signing that raccoon's death certificate.
Wow.
Because that raccoon will eventually become a problem for somebody. And then I have to come in.
You know, I was really surprised to find out one thing. I mean, I always thought one of the acceptable things to do was to trap the raccoon, in this case, and put it in, you know, a cage kind of thing, drive it, I don't know, 10, 15 miles into nowhere and release it. But you told me that's actually illegal. Can you explain why?
Correct. That is illegal. And you can look it up on WAC 220-440-050. The reason that's illegal is because the animal actually suffers and dies a long sufferable death of starvation. If you were to take an animal that's learned how to live in the city and you take it out into the forest, they no longer know where to get food, water, or shelter. They typically die of starvation, dehydration, or they fall prey to another animal.
Okay, and this isn't just, you know, a thing people know instinctively. In fact, didn't you say they tagged some of these animals?
Correct. So Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife did a study on this, and these were their findings, that the animal has a limited chance of survival.
Okay, and
upon relocation.
I think you told me that of the ones they tagged and released, that 90% of them died of starvation.
It was a high number. I don't know exactly, but yes, it was the majority of them died of starvation.
Wow, that's really really amazing. Because I thought that if people moved them, that would be acceptable way.
It's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. You also, I mean, there are some more shocking incidents, but rare. Like, apparently there was a girl attacked by a raccoon down in Paulsbow at some point. And you also told me that squirrels are the number one cause of house fires. Why?
Correct. So as far as the gal getting attacked, the neighborhood was feeding these raccoons, and the raccoons became food aggressive, and they saw her, and they wanted food from her. However, she did not have food. So they bit her on the back of the leg. As far as the squirrels go, when squirrels get into your house, you know, it's nice, warm, dry, comfy place to live. They use the holes that are drilled through studs to run electrical wiring.
Yeah.
Well, they'll build a nest, which is like a tinderbox, and they'll start chewing on wires and electrocute themselves, or create a spark in some way, and the house will burn down.
Wow. That's a frightening thought. Okay. So, you have a business doing this, and people can call you.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
You have a website, and I think you told me it was, well, go ahead, you tell us what the website is, or your email address.
I do have a website on Google. You just have to Google Mitch the Trapper. It's not prevalent as of yet. Not many people have seen it. I do have an email address, MitchTheTrapper@outlook.com,
okay.
And that's all lowercase.
Okay, yeah. And so, You've mentioned some of the jobs that you have done, but when someone calls you up and they say, I have a problem, sometimes it might be obvious that you really are needed. Like if they say there's a whole bunch of otters under my house, that's sort of obvious that,
right.
You know, but there must be sort of a gray line is, you know.
It's actually a definitive line. The definitive line is the animal a nuisance? Is it causing a safety hazard? Is it causing damage to your property? Is it causing a health hazard? If it doesn't fall within that criteria, it's not a nuisance, and I cannot solve the issue.
Okay. And so you then, once you think you've got a scope that you really are needed, you go to the person's house, and obviously you do different kinds of animals, so it varies. But let's say it's a raccoon problem, because since I had a raccoon problem 5 or 6 years ago, I'm curious about that. So what would you do to solve the problem?
So as I said before, the animals aren't the problem. The problem is the provision that we provide. I find out what that is, whether it be food, water, or shelter, and I do my best to remove it or give suggestions as to how to remove that provision. Maybe a raccoon's living in somebody's house. I could live trap the raccoon in a trap, seal up the entrance, and then I can release the raccoon on site. This way, the raccoon remains in its home range. They usually have a backup shelter. Hopefully, it's not the neighbor's house. They still need nowhere to get food, water.
Okay.
And they can survive.
Okay. Well, obviously, there are incidents where that doesn't work. I mean, you're saying the preferable thing is to trap it and release it on site.
Correct.
But if that does not work, if they're back tomorrow or the next day, then
correct.
What?
So I'm working on a job right now here in Port Townsend where raccoons are defecating on a person's property. And this is a health hazard because raccoons carry atrocious parasites.
And it's not just rabies.
There's actually parasites. There's a worm. I can't pronounce it, but I call it the raccoon neck worm, where it embeds itself into the spinal column just beneath the skull. And as it grows over the course of years, it works its way up into the brain through your cerebellum and such. So that is a parasite that we can contract as humans from raccoons. And so in this case, we found out that there was a resident in the area that is potentially feeding these animals. We have tried to stop that. Some people are just a little bit more stubborn than others. There was trees that were allowing shelter or giving these raccoons shelter, so the trees were taken down. We did everything we could possibly do to prevent the raccoons from defecating in this person's yard on their property. So trapping is the last resort. Well, excuse me, euthanasia is the last resort.
Okay, but that is also tightly regulated. You just don't have the option of killing the animal any way you want.
Correct. It's incredibly restrictive.
And essentially, it's done by a gas, correct?
Correct. I have to use a CO2 chamber, and it has to be done in such a way that the animal does not suffer. As people may know, CO2 is an acidic gas. So the idea here is to slowly deplete the chamber of oxygen rather than saturate it with CO2. Once the oxygen level drops below 20% or 19%, the animal goes to sleep, and you allow it time to die, essentially.
Well, I'm glad to hear that it is regulated, and as much as possible, the animals do not suffer. That's important. You must have invested a fair amount of money in your business, because I can't imagine these traps are cheap.
Some are, some are not. But yes, I have invested quite a bit of money in this.
Uh-huh.
I started out as a recreational trapper, so I already had some equipment.
Right.
And going into a wildlife control operator position, it requires more equipment.
Right. Not to mention you have to drive your truck here, there, and everywhere, and the price of gas the way it is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it...
I compensate for that as best I can.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Well, your business is just a couple of years old at this point. Maybe not even that. You're just really getting started.
Just a few months, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's really interesting. Are there other people, as far as you know, that do the same thing?
Yes. There is another gentleman up in the Paulsboro area, and then there is another gentleman out in the Port Orchard area that I know of.
Okay. Yeah, because I think people sort of don't know what to do, really, when they get a situation like that with the larger animals. And you're not like what I would call pest control, where they come because you've got ants or termites or things like that. You don't handle the small stuff.
Correct. So a lot of people don't understand that this does take a special certification to handle.
Yeah.
These larger animals like raccoons and otters and skunks.
Yeah.
Everything coyote and below and above rats is what I deal with.
Okay. Well, it's a quandary, really. It's difficult, you know. We are, as I said earlier, we're sort of on their ground in a way, but then you could look at the other way, they're on our ground, you know.
Right. So one of the largest misconceptions that I've seen in this business so far is we're stealing environments away from these animals. I have found that's far from the truth for these specific animals that I'm dealing with. We actually create a much suitable environment for these animals. I've trapped for raccoons for 3 years in the woods. I caught 2 raccoons.
Huh.
I trapped for 4 days raccoons here in Port Townsend. I caught 6.
Yeah, there's a lot of them around. Okay, well, thank you for joining us and talking about this. I think a lot of people will be fascinated by it. And for our listeners, I just want to repeat, if you are interested in, if you have an animal problem where it really is threatening health or property, the easiest way to reach Mitch is through his email, which is MitchTheTrapper, all lowercase, at outlook.com. Mitch, we're basically out of time. I want to thank you for joining us and being a guest on the show. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Mitch Draper, also known as Mitch the Trapper. Mitch runs a rather unique business which helps homeowners and businesses get rid of wildlife that has become incredibly destructive and even dangerous. In addition to thanking Mitch, I also want to thank Sonny Flores, editor and producer of Our Town. Many of you don't realize how important the role of an editor is on a show like this. He can edit out any mumbles, ums, you knows, and stumbles. He makes us sound so much more eloquent and smooth. And in addition to thanking both Mitch and Sonny, I would like to thank you, the listener, for sticking with KPTZ for the past decade. COVID has been a real challenge for all of us here in Jefferson County. I understand the numbers are once again creeping up, so please get vaccinated and boosted and throw in a flu shot too. It's supposed to be particularly nasty this year. Meanwhile, keep listening to KPTZ. We're a community radio station by and for the people of Jefferson County. Everyone who works here is a volunteer. We give our time because we all believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. We need your support. We need volunteers. And I hate to mention it, we also need donations. We get zero government support. We're entirely listener-supported. So step up and donate. You don't even need to wait for one of our fund drives. Just go to kptz.org right now. Push the big blue button to donate. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend. I'm Marianne McNellis. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Sonny Flores.